I had this great quote from a CDO. He said, well, our AI prototypes and pilots didn't need a data foundation. But now that we try to scale AI across the enterprise, we really need a good data foundation and we do need to invest in that.
Carsten, how are you? Good to see you. Welcome to our quarterly market update call.
Sean, thanks for having me again. And I'm fine. I hope you too.
I am. I'm great. Let's dive in. For us, we're covering last quarter, which was fourth quarter here in the U.S. And we did not have any problems finding topics for things to talk about this time around. And I'm going to dive right in on a topic that's very debated, a bit disruptive and very interesting, especially in the EU markets. Let's talk about cloud and data sovereignty. What's happening on that front in Europe right now?
Yeah, so it has been a topic for quite a while, but it now really heated up. So there are several drivers. One is regulation. Yeah? So basically everywhere around the world, I just read a number, I think in 135 countries have regulations around data sovereignty or sovereignty generally. So basically everyone. So there's definitely regulations too that could be on a country level or also often on an industry level, yeah, especially like in banking and insurance and so on. But then obviously it's geopolitics, yeah, especially the Greenland debate, yeah, might seem a bit peculiar, but this really heated up again the digital sovereignty debate also, because now the US used tariffs not only as an economic, let's say, weapon is maybe too hard, but an economic measure, yeah, but now it used it also politically. As a political weapon. And that really got, again, a lot of interest and discussion around digital sovereignty. And so we see it as a very hot topic over here in Europe. Companies are seriously thinking about their risk exposure, their dependency on certain providers in certain geographies. Yeah, most companies, larger companies, are international. So they have sites and interests and data in the US, in North America, in Europe, but also in China often, if they have production plants there. So it's actually a tough topic to navigate, but companies are on it, and it creates a lot of discussion. And we are running, by the way, a survey right now or to get more data on it, to understand better what happened. We did one year ago, so I'm really looking forward to the results and we can discuss them in our next call. But I can confirm, big topic, companies are looking into it. It's obviously not that easy. Yeah, you cannot just move away from hyperscalers or move from cloud to on-prem, back to on-prem or stuff like that. That's not happening typically. But it's really more concern, yeah, about what data is where. How can I protect it better? Maybe have certain infrastructures or measures in place for certain very sensitive data and so on.
It's fun to lead off our conversation without saying the word AI until we were 3 minutes into the call, but it can't be avoided any longer. We published here at BARC a great piece of research during the fourth quarter, right at the end of the year, authored by myself and Merv Adrian, called Lessons from the Leading Edge. And I wanted to share a couple of pieces of insight we got from that research that the audience should find pretty interesting. This particular project was longitudinal in its design. So we asked a lot of the same questions of our respondents that we asked 2 years ago. So at the 2 years ago, it was more about, what do you plan on doing with AI? What are you concerned that the future might hold? This time around, it was, okay, how did it go? Because everybody who took this piece of research has deployed projects, some of them more than 10 projects. So it was really great to learn from the people that are out there at the front and the leading edge. And one of the biggest things we saw was 2 years ago, we asked about, what do you expect the biggest challenges are going to be? And right in the middle of the pack, about 19% of our respondents said it's likely to be data quality. When the real world hit 2 years later, that number jumped from the middle of the pack to the number one challenge for users when they're trying to deploy AI. Over 55% of our respondents came through and said, this is our biggest problem. And it's a traditional problem, Karsten, right? It's one that's been around a long time and one that many companies kind of keep, we call it kicking it forward, right? It's, well, we'll do that soon. We'll do that soon. I think it's soon. What do you think from a data quality standpoint?
Yeah, I think it's maybe part of two bigger discussions or initiatives that companies need to take to make AI work. One is data governance, and data quality often is one of the big parts of data governance initiatives, but it's because it's not a technical topic. Yeah? It's a lot around organizational measures, assigning ownership, responsibility, processes. Yeah, when does data get entered? How can I clean it up? And so on and so on. So it's a governance question. And secondly, it's also part, obviously, of a data foundation that companies need to run AI. And I had this great quote from a CDO. He said, well, our AI prototypes and pilots didn't need a data foundation, but now that we try to scale AI across the enterprise, we really need a good data foundation and we do need to invest in that. And that's, I think, what's happening, that a lot of AI projects now not turned into data projects, but got additionally a lot of attention on the data foundation. And one of the goals to invest in your data foundation is obviously to improve data quality.
Great, good insights. And I think we'll probably see that number continue to grow as people become more mature in their approach. The second part I wanted to share was around resources for AI innovation. So normally when companies are looking to innovate with AI, they look at trusted software partners, companies that they have solutions with, new innovative software companies, IT internally, especially. And then outside, like regional specialty consultants and the big global SIs, what we found is companies and everybody who's listening that's a user probably agree, there's a preponderance of people begin their resource partnerships internally with IT. But as they deploy more projects, they do less work with IT and they migrate in a different direction. And we asked them a follow-up question and we said, of all five of these resources, which ones are you the most satisfied with? And IT came in last. So no offense to the IT people listening. You play a role here in AI, but you might want to stand back and take a look at what kind of value you're bringing to the table, or are you a choke point? Are you slowing down the innovation? Because as your customers internally, users, they're starting to look outside your organization for assistance and help. And part of that's also probably driven by industry-specific things and sophistication of the deployments. What's your take on that, Karsten?
I think the Gen AI let's say cycle or topic started with more infrastructure type investments, I would call it that way. So people, for example, companies try to get everyone access to Gen AI tools like OpenAI or Anthropic or whatever. And that's something that IT can drive, yeah? Because it's like something that everyone should have access to. But now that AI gets implemented and scaled across the enterprise, it should be everywhere. And that means it should be in the processes. Yeah, it should be in the business applications that are run often in departments or processes. And I think that's what we are seeing right now, that AI is getting more decentralized because the value needs to be created in processes. And now with agentic AI, the focus is really also on process change and automation. But here, you need the business know-how, you need the domain expertise, and that's why I think it basically moves away from IT, which is natural and it has to happen, and it's a good thing that it happens. And it needs to be more like this collaboration, where IT needs to provide the infrastructure, everything that is need there to fundamentally power and fuel AI. But the applications, I think, are more and more now in the business departments.
I agree. I think it's very interesting, and it'll be fun to watch as the coming months. And again, when we do our next update next quarter, I'm sure we'll have thoughts on it. Let's change agendas to what's happening in the vendor world a little bit. And I've been really looking forward to saying this out loud because it's very provocative. BI is dead. And I saying that this morning because I was at a keynote for one of the vendors, and the president of the company came out and made that declaration in front of a couple thousand people in the room, and they are a BI vendor. And what they were referencing is this shift that AI, agentic AI, and Gen AI are kind of replacing the more traditional needs for building dashboards and visualizations and kind of giving way to a different type of user or a different type of usage motion. Do you agree? How do you feel about the declaration that BI is dying?
I would say it's like a clickbait, or is it just like... So obviously BI is not dead, because what's BI? I mean, BI is providing trusted data to decision makers. That's maybe the shortest definition we can think of, but that's still needed. What's changing, and what this is referring to, is obviously the user interface and the interaction. How do I get to that data? What is the software doing to support me, for example, in visualizing it or in analyzing it, and so on? And that's changing. But BI, I think, is still needed. Yeah? And we will still continue to need something like formatted reports. So there is a need for BI. And what's happening is this change in interaction with often Gen AI tools, but often it's also a collaboration. So the BI engines are still working in the background, but the user the exchange with the interface is changing.
Yeah, we see more users accessing their BI engines via interfaces like Slack, for instance, and other communication tools within the organization. Not this more traditional view of, now I need to go and fire up and turn on my BI tool and build a visualization. So yeah, the UI, I think, and AI is enabling that UI, especially around natural language queries and things of that nature. But it is affecting the stack a little bit. And I think that'd be the next piece I would comment on, is that one of the big words or buzzwords that's happening quite a lot right now is the word context, where it's kind of all about the data again. And this goes back to even our original comment about how important data quality is. Now we're talking more and more about semantic layer solutions, this ability to federate out to all of your data and then bring it to a centralized place. And then instead of turning on your BI tool, you might speak to that layer directly. I know that you inside of our business are doing a lot of work around that type of technology. What are you seeing?
Yeah, first of all, I have to comment that it's a bit funny. I mean, we are talking about semantic layers in BI tools, coming back to BI, for, I don't know, 20 years or even more. So in a way, it's not super new, but what basically it is, yeah, you need metadata, you need more information, and often you need also more than a technical catalog, yeah, which gives you information about the data, but very technically, but you also need something like the metrics and the business information around it. So some call it also a business glossary, yeah, and together with the metadata on the data itself, on the more technical metadata, I think then that makes a quite powerful base or layer, if you want, of information that helps you to basically guide queries, understand results of queries. And what we see is that with the increase of agentic AI, the increased usage of agentic AI, you see also the deficits of the agents, yeah, because they lack common sense, they lack human knowledge of organizational structures, yeah, of basically just what we would think is completely normal, just background or foundational knowledge, but they are lacking all of that. So the idea to provide more context is becoming even more important, yeah, because especially agents need more of that. And the challenge now that we see for companies is to figure out where this, let's call it maybe semantic or context layer, is actually situated. Because you can build it in databases, you can build it in data catalogs. The BI tools wanted to play a role. There are specialized vendors and tools in the market. So right now, it's actually an architectural challenge and something that data people or data responsible people need to figure out is, yeah, how should I build that and where?
I agree. I think it's fun and interesting as an analyst to see some changes in what has long been a kind of traditional layer of what businesses need to make better decisions. And now I think it's expanding. But in order to expand, the vendors in the space will have to make some strategic decisions, probably some investments and maybe some acquisitions and so on. A lot of the BI vendors that we speak with, almost all of them are SaaS companies. And I'm going to transition to our third topic at this point. It might not have been the best quarter to be a SaaS company. And I'm not saying specifically the BI players. I'm saying everybody in the SaaS space. It was really volatile from an up and down standpoint. And a lot of that's being driven by the impact of AI and large language models. And I, for those listening today, Karsten heads up our M&A practice and our investment side inside of Bark. And I know you're very close to this topic. We had a huge list of investments and acquisitions this last quarter, but let's talk about SaaS real quick before you move on to those.
Yeah, I mean, we all saw and followed these big drop in valuations of the publicly listed SaaS, so basically software, application software companies. And that was really astonishing. And it seemed like with announcements, especially from OpenAI and Anthropic, even, let's say, not super big announcement, the share prices just dropped. And what we see here is that there's a big uncertainty in the investment community about the effect of AI on traditional or existing software application companies. And it's pretty unclear, how much of the business they have will be maybe substituted or how much maybe harder it will get for them to sell. And so it's actually a phase in the market where the investors try to figure out what the actual effects are. And it's obviously very hard to predict. And that's what we are seeing is right now is a bit of an overreaction, that it's so unclear to the investment community that basically the investments are sometimes stopping, or basically there's no fresh money running going into these companies often, or there's a big uncertainty. And the projection would be that it might take another 3 to 6 months until investors got more clarity and are back on track and understand this whole thing better. But for example, we also see it right now in due diligence processes. As you said, we have an active M&A practice. We work for investors in assessing data analytics and AI companies. And we do a lot of work now in an AI risk assessment. Yeah? So we spend a lot of thinking and research into the actual risk that a software vendor is exposed to by AI. Yeah? So by advancements in AI. And obviously, that's super interesting. And there, I can share with you, there are a few things that investors are not appreciating at all right now. That's something, for example, if you say you are a low-code vendor, that's where red lights go on. And investors say, hey, low-code or coding is something that AI will do in the future. So that's not something we want to invest in any company. So things like that are happening. But as I said, I think some is a bit of an overreaction. Because often I think there is value in SaaS companies that cannot be replaced immediately or short term by AI applications, but it's more the uncertainty that we see right now.
I heard an executive at a client company recently say that we're looking at whether or not we'll eliminate Salesforce and ServiceNow in the future and simply vibe code our own version. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I understand it's a reflection of what's happening in the SaaS market and how people see things. And your point about coding is spot on. We go to a lot of events and we travel quite a bit, and I spend a lot of time in Ubers. And I often get asked, oh, you're a technology person, what do you recommend? And my answer used to be, become a software developer, learn how to code. I do not answer the question the same way anymore. It's now learn AI, make sure you're an AI expert. So the terrain is definitely changing. What did you see that was most interesting in the large list of acquisitions and investments we saw that we tracked this last quarter?
Yeah, first of all, it's a long list. So I mean, there is this uncertainty I just reflected on. But on the other hand, obviously, in the data, AI and CPM space, there's still a lot happening. So I can just pick out a few that we found especially interesting over the course of this quarter and last quarter. And going back in time, around the November timeframe, we saw two acquisitions by Salesforce, which we found quite interesting. So one was more in the agentic AI space, that was Spindle AI. But then the big one that obviously everyone talked about was Informatica. Yeah, it's Salesforce adding data management, data integration, data quality, master data management capabilities in a large way to its portfolio, I think was an interesting move and overall a good move. I mean, Salesforce also moving in their data cloud, so basically also a data platform and data management offering and having data integration capabilities now. Also makes a lot of sense, but that obviously was one of the big ones. Other acquisitions that we found interesting, there were actually two in the BI space. We talked about BA. One is older vendor, Jaspersoft, yeah, that made its way into the BI segment with an open source offering. That's long ago. But it's pretty stable, interestingly, as a business, yeah, supporting the claim that we still need formatted reporting, which is the sweet spot of Jaspersoft. And HCL software picked it up, adding it to the portfolio of Actian, the databases and data management. They also acquired Zinia, the data catalog now, and they have a BI tool. So obviously something's happening there. HCL software is building out their data and analytics portfolio. The other interesting one was obviously Pyramid, yeah, one of the innovative, fast-moving vendors in the space, and they got acquired by ServiceNow just recently in February. And I found this quite interesting because I think it's not only adding more and better, BI and analytics capabilities in an operational, transactional software application that ServiceNow is, but I think it can also support ServiceNow's agentic AI plays, generally the AI plays, yeah, by adding capabilities around everything. Pyramid had a very broad portfolio of analytics capabilities. So I think that could be also quite helpful. Looking at other investments or acquisitions that we found interesting is that Microsoft acquired Osmos, a data integration vendor. And there's a lot going on in the data integration, data management space. So there were more acquisitions. For example, Snowflake acquired Observe, a data observability vendor, and there were more like that. Another segment is obviously AI governance. So adding to data governance, but that attracts now also investments. ClickHouse, this fast-moving, fast-growing data platform, acquired Langfuse. LatticeFlow, a specialist vendor in that space, acquired AI Sonar. So I think two good examples of that. And everyone like ourselves that has been around quite long in the space knows Vertica, one of the pioneers in the analytical databases. They have now been acquired by Rocket Software. So OpenText moved it, basically the software asset on. So maybe that's also interesting. Another big one also, data integration, is Confluent, obviously, and IBM picked it up. I think also a very good acquisition, because Confluent is really a big vendor in real-time integration. So I think that was a good acquisition from IBM. Short look at the CPM space. There also a lot happened. The big event, obviously, was HG acquiring OneStream, so one of the biggest vendors in the market. And that was also a big acquisition, a multi-billion dollar acquisition. But also on the smaller end of the market, things were happening. Profix acquired a small Canadian vendor, Cradle, and Venna acquired Actarus, which has a Power BI integration. So also basically broadening their portfolio to the planning and Power BI segment, which is an interesting one. Basically, this planning add-ons or building planning applications on top of Power BI. Those were only a few. But to not make it too long, I stop here. But a lot happening.
A great recap and a fun quarter for sure. Looking forward to seeing everybody again for our market update next quarter. Karsten, thanks for joining me for the conversation today.
Sean, it was a pleasure again. Thanks and bye-bye to everyone.
Goodbye.